Welcome back to Season 8 of Talking with Traders. This is the fourth year of this podcast since it began in 2020. Once again, IG Markets have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful and privileged to have such a global leader in CFD trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the podcast, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Once again, thank you to IG Markets for sponsoring this podcast into its fourth year. And thank you, listeners, for your continued support of this podcast. Now, let's get into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Talking with Traders. And I counted them up. This is actually episode number 99 of Talking with Traders. So we're hitting up towards that 100 mark soon. My guest is someone who came onto this podcast right in the beginning, in the first series in 2020. His name is Bruce Main from Ivy Asset Management. And Bruce, this is your third appearance on the Talking with Traders podcast. And it's the third time I'm asking you because you were so good in the previous interviews and so insightful. And I really thought it's time to chat to you again because you're my go-to guy when it comes to futuristic investment themes. And you've spoken to me in the past about AI and fintech and gene editing and Tesla and electric vehicles and all of this kind of stuff. Always been very, very insightful. And there's a couple of reasons why I wanted to invite you back now, which we'll talk to in a moment. But before I do that, welcome back to the podcast, Bruce. It's good to be speaking to you again.
No, Garth, well, thank you very much. And also thank you to the listeners.
Yeah, cool. So why I thought it would be such an opportune time to talk to you again is because these themes that I referred to a moment ago were all the rage in 2020 and into 2021 to some extent. During COVID, we saw massive booms in a number of the gene editing stocks and some fintech stocks and those sort of things. Cathy Wood and her ARK funds were, she could just do no wrong. Her funds were going to the moon. But since then, things have changed quite dramatically. We've gone from what was then a very low, pretty much zero interest rate environment with hugely accommodative monetary policy from the central banks as we came out of COVID. We've gone into an environment where interest rates are higher and have been rising, but now possibly peaking. And what typically happens with those type of futuristic businesses is you're looking, the market prices them for their future potential earnings. But when interest rates are high, you need to start discounting those future earnings back at a higher interest rate. And it basically makes your net present value a hell of a lot lower. So we've seen big sell-offs in, Cathy Wood's ARK funds and all the stuff that she owns, a number of fintech and genomic companies and all of that sort of thing. However, why I thought it was interesting to talk to you now is because although those shares have all been smashed, they have been making these enormous big base patterns over the last 2 years. And me being a humble technical analyst, I look at that and I think, well, that's interesting. The saying often goes that the bigger the base, the higher into space. And the bases that we're seeing on some of these types of stocks and these themes that we're going to talk about are enormous. And we're starting to see them now beginning to break to the upside through the top of those bases. And it also comes at a time where it seems like the interest rate cycle is peaking and we've possibly got interest rates cuts coming, in the US and elsewhere from central banks around the world. So hence the reason for wanting to speak to you again to revisit these themes, because it looks to me like we're on the cusp of another boom in these things. And possibly we're, at the bus is about to leave the station. So here we are, Bruce. So let's get into this. And I want to chat to you about each of these themes. But we're going to start with the biotech space, because I know that's something you've been very interested in. And we spoke about CRISPR and Twist Biosciences and Cathy Wood's ARK Genomics fund in the past. I want to find out where you're at with this theme now and how we're looking at it from a valuations perspective and from the outlook fundamentally and where you see things going from here.
So I think a fantastic example for this, I'm going to draw a square, and I'm going to say in the top right of that square are all your traditional drug makers. And I think what's important, what guests and listeners need to understand, is the traditional drug makers have been creating medicines that treat the symptom. So if you look at most of your conventional drug makers, your body has some kind of defect that's happened. You're producing an enzyme or a protein that's effectively killing you, and these drug makers have come up with solutions. So if you go to, for example, a diabetes, you're going to be taking synthetic insulin that they're going to create for you. So if you look at those, that's all at the top right. Those are your most valuable companies. That is Merck, Roche Pharmaceutics, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what is interesting in that top right space is some of those drug companies have started to partner with some of these biotechs because they understand that the drug development cycle, how drugs are being developed, are changing. There are one or two drug makers that, in my opinion, aren't. And for me, for lack of a better explanation, I'll call them the Boeing of drugs. So they're refusing to innovate. They're sticking with their older drug cycles. And I think those drug makers into the future on the top right are probably in big trouble. A classic example for me would be Pfizer. I think a lot of their innovation is going off. And if you go and have a look at the chart of Pfizer, it's literally done nothing since 1998. So before we discredit the smaller biotechs and the pressures that they've been under, which you spot on, it's all been related to interest rates and future earnings, which a lot of these are projecting into the 4, 5, 6 years time when some of the FDA approvals come. But if you look at the innards of what they are able to do and what has happened in the last year or two, I mean, there have been some astounding move forward. So certainly in an example, Twist Biosciences, they're offering drug makers synthetic genes, and those technologies, both in plant and animal-based discoveries, are making the drug discovery for your drug makers a lot cheaper to synthesize those drugs and get them done. So that's kind of the live environment of testing. And then obviously you get a CRISPR that sits on the gene editing technology. And this is where I go to that bottom left corner. And I say these companies are worth $6 billion, $2 billion, $1 billion. Your top right is worth trillions. So there's a massive mismatch between drug companies that are producing what could potentially become a cure. So not are they treating the symptoms, they're actually creating an environment to re-enable your ability to produce insulin or enabling your immune system to recognize the cancer cells in your body and kill them through immunotherapies. So these type of discoveries are happening now. And I think an example with CRISPR, CRISPR's got about just over $2.5 billion in cash and is worth $6 billion. So here you're looking at supposedly a small biotech that's risky, but actually it's got a hell of a lot of cash on its balance sheet. It owns the gene CRISPR gene editing technology, which it licenses out. So it's almost more of a licensing-based business. And then on top of that, they've had the first approved FDA beta thalassemia drug, which I've created, and beta thalassemia is not a ubiquitous disease. It's quite concentrated, and it's effectively the inability of your body to absorb oxygen through red blood cells. So, as I said, they are able to create a solution through CRISPR gene editing that ensures that the enzyme that was stopping that blood from absorbing oxygen, it edits that out and makes sure that your cells return to normal, and it actually cures the person of beta thalassemia. So that is your first inkling to your lower left coming up with solutions that cure patients completely of the disease. So I think that mismatch in valuations, the trillions in the top right and the billions in the bottom left, they have to converge over time. So I think the pressure points in these are the fact that higher interest rates have put a lot of pressure on the lower end biotechs. But inside those, and in, especially obviously inside the Cathie Wood's genomic gene technology editing ETF, there's no doubt that those are full of these bottom left biosciences. I would say to me, CRISPR is probably the safest bet of all, because it probably almost looks more like a royalties business than just a solution to some of these diseases coming up. And I think CRISPR, importantly, in their latest quarterlies, they've now got discoveries and joint ventures with Vertex Pharmaceuticals. These are $106-110 billion businesses, and all of those technologies are looking at solutions in oncology, diabetes, weight gain, you know, all of the sort of latest themes that you're hearing in the big medical space. So that really kind of looks at the biotechs in that space. But what is interesting as well is that also converges into AI, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. So I'll bring that theme back and explain that a little bit later. But that gives you an idea of where we are with the biotechs at the moment.
All right. It's fascinating. So the two companies that you mentioned there, which are listed and tradable, is CRISPR, and then Twist Biosciences is the other one that you've mentioned. I mean, I know there are plenty of others, but if an investor wanted to get exposure to this theme, ARC Genomic ETF is the way to go, just to get a broad exposure, I suppose.
So ARC Genomics would definitely be probably the most aggressive in these biotech spaces. You can also look at BlackRock has a really nice future medical ETF. So there are a couple of those iShares. I mean, there are others, maybe a little bit less risky.
Yeah.
Without doubt, ARC Genomics, I think, is really at the forefront of exactly what I've been talking about. I think if I'm correct, I'd have to have a look, because they do move in valuations. But I think CRISPR is her top holding, which would make sense to me in the fact that it's actually, you know, over $2 billion in cash, and it's a $6 billion market cap, and you own the rights to literally gene editing. I mean, it's astoundingly cheap business.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, the other ETFs that I look at in that space, so there's IBB, that's the code, it's a biotech ETF, and then XBI, which I think is that the iShares biotech ETF. But anyway, I mean, the point is they're all of these things are making those huge, big bases in their share prices that I referred to, and starting to look like they're coming out the right-hand side of the base. And in stock market terminology, I think it was Stan Weinstein who kind of came up with the stage analysis of markets, where you get a stage one base, then you get a stage two bull market, a stage three where it tops out, and stage four is a bear market. And it looks to me like a lot of these things are now in that stage one, transitioning into stage two potential bull markets. So that, just to kind of get back to the technicals there. All right, Bruce, that's awesome. The next one we wanted to chat about is to come back to Tesla. I know you've been a big Tesla bull in the past, and that share has certainly given its shareholders quite a roller coaster ride over the last couple of years. The last time that I spoke to you, actually, I was listening to our previous interview, which was in the end of 2022 or 21. I can't remember now. But at that stage, Tesla just hits $400 a share, and that was post-split. It was, I think, at that stage it hit $1 trillion market cap. And but it's obviously down a lot since then, and the shares are down 55% from the peak. Now, where are you on Tesla? I mean, I think I know you've always said in the past you don't see it just as a car company, but I mean, for the most part, I think is what it's known for at the moment. And it does seem there's a lot of competition coming in from particularly Chinese manufacturers. And we see it here in the UK. There are lots of other electric vehicles coming to the market. And yes, Tesla was the pioneer in that space and got a head start on everybody else. But it does seem like a lot of the other manufacturers are starting to catch up. So where are you on Tesla now?
So I think Tesla's quite an interesting animal to try and explain. And it's obviously very hard when a share price is under pressure and going down. You kind of go, what are the innards inside the business that are causing this? What is the logic behind the sort of discounted cars and the pricing pressure that they're putting on it? And I think what you actually realize is there's a massive efficiency push with inside those factories to drive down the cost of cars. And I think what's very important, and this has been mentioned a couple of times, Tesla's view of competition is not from your traditional automakers, not from your General Motors, not from your Ford, BMW, Mercedes. They view the competition from China, and they feel that they're in the same kind of mode of driving down costs and making cars more affordable. So I think in that same context, a BYD is probably a better business to look at and compare to Tesla from the car manufacturing side, and look at that particular parcel of Tesla and where its sort of future lies. So I think, Garth, we can go back to do electric vehicles make sense? Well, certainly less parts, less costly in terms of maintenance. We know that obviously in areas where there are supercharging networks and those are available, then ultimately your total running cost of your car is significantly cheaper than a gas car. And I think you get the traditional people, can I get from A to Z if I'm going on long distance and those fears? And obviously what Tesla's putting in place is a larger and larger charging network. Interestingly, yeah, in South Africa, I saw a couple of weeks ago, a massive expansion of our charging network that will happen. And I think, unfortunately, South Africa doesn't really have the policies in place to attract these foreign producers of electric motor cars. But let's get back to Tesla. And I think, so number one, you're seeing this pressure on margins. Now, the best example I can give you of exactly the same thing that was put through was a online book business that proceeded to lower its margins and put pressure on all its competitors. And it squeezed and squeezed and squeezed until it became the dominant player in the online industry. And that business was similarly criticized by Wall Street for not adhering to target projections of earnings, etc., because the long vision was have as many of these cars available to the public, and have them available by affordable pricing, which is obviously Tesla's main push. And we will be able to sell software and other services to those cars, which will have far longer reaching margins for Tesla shareholders in the long term. So I think that's your one vertical, which is your motor industry, that's obviously under criticism at the moment. Then you go to silo number two, and you look at energy and the energy side of the business. Now, we know less than 2 weeks ago, KTL, which is their biggest battery partner, has come out and said they will halve battery costs this year. So now we know that both into energy storage and into the car industry, a key component of the cost is going down. And then we move into the third silo, and that's obviously the AI and the AI integration. And again, and I think what's a fantastic metric to work on, Tesla's full self-driving technology, which you can go onto YouTube and look at guys that are using it and where it's gone and the mistakes and the mishaps to where it is now. And what's very important, it's end-to-end neural network software. And to give that in its simplest form and explanation, it means it's no longer code written by a person with the car deciding what to do. What the car is doing is it's taking the visual imagery that's coming in and it's processing that through an AI brain that's reacting to how people drive in the real world. Now, what is Tesla's advantage on this side? Well, with its current cars and fleet around the world, it's got 100 million miles a day that are coming in. And that is way ahead of competitors. So really where Tesla is, it's on the compute side to be able to pull that data in, analyze it, and be able to push it out to the new versions of full self-driving that are making this car coming closer and closer to being able to be driven without a, I suppose, a living driver in the driver's seat, so per se. So if you look at those three components of Tesla, and I think the most interesting one at the moment is actually going to be energy storage. I think that's the fastest growing component. I think it's the component that's going to be driven with the fastest lower cost in battery. And inside that as well is Autobidder, which is an AI energy trading system
that buys and sells power now through their partners, where they set up these big mega pack installations, 250 megawatts, 300 megawatts. What they are offering is a system that will run all of your integration into the electrical network, but it'll actually offer you the ability to trade energy, and then Tesla takes a margin out of that energy trading. So I think what the line item that I'm looking for in the next quarter is actually energy. And I will obviously be interested in the car side, and I don't think that's going away, but certainly into finally what will become the cheap model, almost the equivalent of a Toyota Corolla, a cost electric motor car. How's that going to come to fruition? So all of these iterations, the solar silo, the energy silo, the AI silo, plus the sort of push of cheaper and cheaper cars in production by, and I think probably one of the best quotes I've ever heard by Elon Musk with all his engineers is always remember the best part is no part. Find a way to make the car simpler, better. And I think that through that whole chain of events, I think in 2 or 3 years' time, this business will metamorphosize into an enormous energy, cash generator. So I really see this company in the trillions of market cap over the next 4 or 5 years. So you've got to go through this pain. And Amazon did exactly the same thing in the 2000s. It ran up from $5 to 100, back to $5 or $6. Then what did it do? It created that long base. It's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. And then you had an explosion from, you know, a 30, 40 billion market cap business to the trillion mega cap that it is today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very comfortable with Tesla. It's obviously, you know, you've got to explain this to clients and allow them to be patient. And it's important to be patient because hidden behind this business is a look, he he's certainly a controversial CEO. and you've got to live with that. But with that comes the genius of what is created. Make no error, you know, this is not Musk's show anymore. If you watch those quarterly results, there is a massively competent engineering component right the way through that company, through to China, through to Germany, where he's got some of the best engineers in the world. And I think take it that it's a known fact that engineers leaving Harvard, Princeton, all of these top universities in the world, their top job request is to go to SpaceX, and their second is to go to Tesla. And I think what more do you want to know than that? It's not
Absolutely.
To go into China.
Fantastic. All right. So we should, this 55% drawdown in the Tesla share price, we should look at it as an opportunity to accumulate.
Short-term pain
for long-term gain. Right. Okay. All right. Then the next theme I want to chat to you about, Bruce, is fintech. Kiara, I follow there's a lot of ETFs again in this space, but I look at FinX. That's the Global X Fintech ETF. And again, it's exactly like the others that I've spoken about. Huge, big base over the last 2 years. It had a big run up in 2020, crashed and burned in 2022. And now it's been basing for the last year and a half to 2 years and starting to build out of the base. And I mean, there's a lot of companies obviously in that space. One that I particularly like is Block Inc. or Square, was always known as Square before, changed its name. It's a Jack Dorsey business, right? Who, the guy that founded Twitter. Where are you on fintech and what are the opportunities we're looking at there?
Yeah, again, I think we can go back to that Square again, top right, bottom left, and you can have the fintechs in the bottom left where their market caps are the 25 billion, 30 billion, 15 billion, some even a little bit less. And then in the top right, you've got the traditional banking suite, and that's your JP Morgan's, all your large enterprise banks. And I think you kind of say to yourself, we quite brand conscious at our age in terms of an FNB, a Standard Bank, Barclays, et cetera, if it's in the UK. So there's little, but I think the youth of today are less brand sensitive and more, you know, well, as long as it's done through an Apple iStore and I'm comfortable with it, I'm happy to download an app. And if that app has functionality and I can do everything that I want within that app, I'm quite bank agnostic. So I think you're slowly getting that traction. And I guess the difficulty here is the old traditional Wall Street analyst to the new, what's the new? And I guess the new is the youth and new consumers, new people into the market. It's cheaper. I get more functionality. I used to get this private banking in inverted commas. That's now AI. I don't really want to talk to anybody unless I've got a problem. So as long as my solution can be fixed quickly, I'm happy. And I think traditional banks, I'm not going to mention any names yet. I'm going through a bit of a process. And it's cumbersome. It's cumbersome. It doesn't work. You present yourself in person and they're kind of shocked that you're actually in the branch. I mean, it's all kind of weird. So I think, is there again that movement between old and new? And I think certainly what is possible, not necessarily the traditional old banks in the top right, acquiring down into the fintechs, you could find an Apple and a Google, those type of companies start looking at, what's a quick way for us to get into this particular opportunity and converse that through our, or converge it through, our network. So an Apple buying a Block could be quite interesting. But aside of that, again, a lot of these fintech businesses have got Bitcoin integrated into it. And again, you're seeing the rise of Bitcoin, the rise of the ETFs. And is there a point that's going to come where Bitcoin will be used as a native internet currency as opposed to the US dollar or the pound as a medium of transfer? And I gave that example, I think, in the last of BitPesa,
yep,
where the person in Kenya struggled. It took almost a month to get the currency converted to dollars to pay the custom in Japan. And by literally sitting on the Bitcoin network for a few seconds, the customer could be paid same day, and those cars were transported from Japan the next day because their customer paid. So it unlocked almost a month's worth of working capital in that business that imported cars. So I think if we can see a functional use, you can see businesses that integrated in, all those checkbox made, I mean, Square or Block now, absolutely 100%. It's very, very well positioned. I mean, all of those cross-pollinations in the fintech space, so I really like it. And again, you've got the Arc fintechs, you've got the general fintech that you can get exposure to. Quite difficult for them. Again, low interest rate environment was very encouraging for them. Obviously, they suffered because of the earnings projections and profitability. But I think all of those companies are focused a lot more with the rising interest rates, and they're making the Wall Street analysts a little bit happier. So I definitely think in the next few quarters, you're going to see, and you have seen in Block in the last quarter, a much stronger showing across the board. I wouldn't be surprised to see that continue.
Yeah, I mean, Block's up 100% off its lows of sort of halfway through last year. But when you look at the long-term chart, it might be 100% off the bottom, but it's still, like 70% below the top from where it peaked in late 2020, 2021. So yeah, it's interesting. Also interesting what you're saying about the big traditional banks, and that you've got your own problem. And we'll talk about this offline afterwards, I suppose, because we're kindred spirits in that respect. I'm also going through a hell of a fight with one of the big traditional banks here. And it's just amazing to see the difference when you're dealing with a large, big, cumbersome bank with long to the old legacy systems and what have you, versus the new age. Like now I opened a Revolut account, the bank is on my phone, and it's so much easier. So that's exactly talking to what you were saying, is just this new way of doing things, cutting out these big legacy businesses, is actually quite refreshing in a lot of ways. Artificial intelligence. I've saved this one for last in terms of the themes that we're discussing. Obviously, artificial intelligence right now is all the rage. It's NVIDIA, it's AMD, it's Supermicro Computer. All of these shares are going absolutely gangbusters at the moment. Is this? I am getting whiffs of the dot-com bubble era again here. I'm wondering, are we reliving that? This AI, I've no doubt it's a theme that's going to change our lives. I don't doubt that. But like with .com, the internet was going to change our lives, and it did change our lives. But the valuations of those businesses in 1999 and 2000 was just stupid. Are we seeing a similar sort of thing with AI now? Are these valuations ridiculous, or are these companies still going to grow into these enormous earnings, projections that they're currently pricing in?
So I think I definitely think the chip businesses seem to be a bit hot. Whenever you get that kind of almost a rocket taking off, which
it's like a parabolic. It's almost like the share price chart's going to loop backwards if it goes any steeper.
Correct. I think you've got to watch out for that. So there's some, there definitely are some chip makers, et cetera, that are a bit hot. As for the theme itself, I don't think so at all. I think that there are some massive opportunities. And I hear a great example. If you have the ability to download Copilot, if you have the ability to download ChatGPT, some of these products that are now out there, and a classic example, quite random, we were having a discussion with some professional golfers, and I kind of said to them, but how many of you use a broom putters? How many of the top? And instead of Googling how many, I just co-piloted and asked Copilot, how many professional golfers in the top 100 in the world use broom putters? And literally, it listed every single golfer, what their ranking was, their broom, which broom putter, which brand they used, etc. And you now hear things with Copilot integrated into PowerPoint, where I've got to create a presentation and I've got to do it. It's about sustainability, and I literally give the brief of what I want on each slide. I tell Copilot what I want, and I go with a forest and tree theme. It builds you the entire presentation. Now, some people go, oh, that's going to take work away from people. No, what it actually does is it gives you more time to spend on more important things than fiddling around, putting pictures together, in a presentation. So these type of AI-based integrated products, I think they add value. Would you pay $10 a month for it? 100%. It makes my life easier, so I'll use it. And similar in that, now we go back to artificial intelligence and the biotechs. You've got a company like AlphaFold, which sits in Google, that it does 3D modeling of the interactions of proteins. Now we go back to what were we trying to do with the biotechs? Were we trying to create an environment that either stops creating a protein or produces a different one? And here you've got AI that can now integrate into those biotechs and artificially show you what the solution is, as opposed to doing, for example, a human trial. So it can speed up the drug process. So that now you start seeing AI integrating into the various different things, which we also came to Tesla with general intelligence. And we think that's going to also be a component. They obviously have got the robot that they're developing as well. That same system that runs the car will be used in that. And then you get to probably what I think is the most interesting AI business at the moment is Palantir, which is listed on the NASDAQ. And it actually emanates out of the military industry. So did a whole lot of military projects. And I know they all get that sort of nasty, ooh, the bad guys. But actually, the internet originated out of the military. Where it came from. Huge innovations. Now, what Palantir did is they've taken a lot of what they've done for the military, and they started producing what they started releasing to the public in what they called boot camps. And they said to the public, come with your organization's issue and problems and come into our boot camp scenario, which allows you to get access to our API. And you can tell us how would you want to integrate AI into your business? And we will work with you for 5 or 6 days. We'll give you some live examples, give you some, in inverted commas, free software for you to use. And if you like it, then you buy it. I mean, it's as simple as that. Now, Palantir recently, very relevant to you, Garth, they won the service solution for the NHS in the UK. And that's a big number, in the hundreds of millions of pounds. Why did they win it? They won it because your competitors are going to come in and say, well, I've got 40 consultants that are going to now come in with the project. They're going to work on building the solution. You've got to pay them for them to build what you want. And they are going to stay, and you're going to have this massive bill that's going to be accruing in the background to have all of these. And that's an old traditional, for lack of a better explanation, let's say SAP-based model. Here, Palantir built the entire solution that NHS wanted to use. They gave them the ability to use it for 6-7 months and then said, okay, you like it, now you pay for it. Now, to give you an example of how successful that's been, they've now opened up boot camps in October to basically offer it to any business based in the US or UK or anywhere, could come into those sessions, advise what they would want their solution to do, and they will allow you into that boot camp, as I said. Now, they projected to have 500 businesses by the fourth quarter of 2023. They had more than 560, so they beat their own targets. And one of the comments by the internal manager is he said he's never seen such a huge amount of pent-up demand to integrate AI-based solutions into companies. And why? Because it's twofold. Everybody thinks it's going to produce or land up with job cuts. I think it actually allows people to be more productive, the company to be more productive. In some case, yes, there might be redundancies, but most of all, I think you'll see an enhancement of business production. So my view in Palantir, sitting in a sort of $45 to $50 billion market cap, I believe it can go right up into that big enterprise space, into the SAP sort of position. And, you know, those are $250 to $300 billion market cap businesses, and that'll be driven by pure conversion of those boot camps into paying customers, into the $1 to $2 to $5 million projects that they do for these organizations in the 500 to 600 customers per quarter. And you've got a beautifully diversified business. They've recently just won another big contract in the US military. So there's absolutely no doubt that their AI technology is brilliant. It's world-class. It's being adopted by both commercial and governments. And actually, the founder behind Palantir, just for a bit of context and background, actually worked with Elon Musk right in the beginning days. So it's Peter Thiel. They worked at PayPal together. So you're definitely seeing the same actors seeing the opportunities and obviously working them out. So yes, Palantir would be, for me, I think in the longer term, next 2, 3, 4 years, a great opportunity.
Okay, fantastic. All right, super. Bruce, I know you're a prolific reader. That's how you get all of this vast knowledge that you have. And you also study. I know you've been a constant student through your life, studying new things, going on different courses and what have you. Have you studied anything new since we last spoke, or are you studying anything currently?
Yeah, so at the moment, just being quite busy. I haven't been able to do one of the sort of Harvard or AI courses that I did through Oxford. So nothing new. But what I do find very interesting is certainly these courses and what they allow you and allow the sort of information and access to, I think, are world class. And more, if you look online, you just go onto Twitter. A lot of these courses are actually being offered for free. So especially in AI, I think they're encouraging young people to come in. They want to spot the talent, and then obviously the value is be able to bring that person into the organization, etc. So there's definitely a step up in that. Also, I think, you know, and this whole podcast will be on YouTube. I mean, God, this is YouTube. I mean, if you can obviously ensure that you look and follow the right people, because there's also a lot of garbage out there.
Yeah.
But if you can pick up the right people that you like following, that get the metrics right. There's a guy called Tom Nash that's on YouTube. I find his podcast absolutely brilliant. And you know, you follow those type of people. Don't be... You know, be encouraged to look for the people that you also disagree with. I think that's also important. So don't necessarily just reinforce your own positive dynamic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it comes point in case. You know, Tesla doesn't get everything right. They do get things wrong. Just make sure that they get more things right than wrong. So that's where I am with that at the moment, Garth. But yeah, I always like to study and learn more. So whenever there's the opportunity in space, I'll be doing that.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, super. Well, this has been a podcast rich with ideas as always. So just to sum it up for the listeners, we spoke about in the biotech space, we talked about CRISPR, Twist Biosciences, and then obviously you've got the Arc Genomic ETF there as well. We talked about Tesla, we talked about fintechs, and there's a lot of interesting ETFs in that space. But the one company, like you said, that stands out is Block Inc. And then obviously artificial intelligence. We spoke about that as well and some of the opportunities there. Bruce, I'm going to wrap it up there because that's pretty much it in terms of our allotted time. But as always, I was very excited to speak to you and I haven't been disappointed. It leaves us with lots of ideas. And I thank you for your time and for your wisdom and sharing your knowledge with the listeners. And hopefully we can maybe regroup again in another year's time and catch up again and see where we are at that point.
No, Garth, absolute pleasure. And thank you very much for having me. And thank you to the listeners.
Cheers, thanks. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to this series by clicking on the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd also appreciate if you'd leave a review on the app too. Till next time.